Hello, I'm Emma Desi, and welcome to another episode of Turning Readers into Writers. If you're brand new here, welcome, and here's what you need to know. This is a community that believes you are never too old to write your first novel. No matter what you've been up to until now, if you're ready to write your book, I'm ready to help you reach the end. I focus on helping you find the time and confidence to begin your writing journey, as well as the craft and skills you need to finish the book. Each week I interview debut authors, editors and industry experts to keep you motivated, inspired and educated on all things writing, editing and publishing. If you want to catch up, head on over to emmadesi.com where you'll find a wealth of information and tools to help you get started. Before we dive in, this week's episode is brought to you by my free cheat sheet, 30 Top Tips to Find Time to Write. In this guide, I give you 30 ways that you can find time to write in the small gaps that appear between the various errands and tasks and responsibilities that you have in your day-to-day life. Now, you might be thinking that you don't have any time to spare, but I can guarantee these top tips will give you writing time you didn't think you had. If you thought writing always involved a pen and paper or a keyboard, think again. If you thought you needed at least an hour at a time to write your manuscript, I help you reframe that. You won't be disappointed. Get your free copy of 30 Top Tips to Find Time to Write by going to emmadesi.com/30top tips. Okay, let's dive in to today's episode. Chris Andrews is a writer, editor, teacher, and mentor. Having listened to master storytellers all his life, Chris boldly and ignorantly believed that reading great stories transferred the skills to tell great stories. It turns out writing an awesome book is a lot harder than it looks, and so a journey of discovery has begun, which won't end before the universe kicks him off the planet once more. Being a writer, it's traditional to have cats, but his dogs thought that was a stupid idea. Chris's mission is to write stories that matter and be remembered for all the right reasons. So let's find out a little bit more about Chris and his journey to writing and what he's writing now and the ways in which he helps other writers get their start. Well, Chris, thank you so much for being here with me today. I'm delighted to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me. It is great. Finally actually meeting you face to face.
Well, I wonder if you could start off telling us about your journey to writing and what brought you to where you are now.
Yeah, I had a funny entry into writing, I suppose. I was mostly just a reader. I loved stories. And one day I said to a few mates, I could write a better story than this. And they kind of gave me this funny look, and then it's like, well, why don't you? I'm going, okay, I will. And so I just started giving it a shot and found out that what I thought was easy wasn't. So I spent a lot of time then trying to figure out how to write. I went to uni, and then that was fantastic in the sense that I learned a lot about writing in the sense of how to construct sentences and things like that. It didn't really teach me how to. It took a long time after that to, first of all, realize that what I was writing was quite clear and legible and understandable, but it wasn't entertaining. So I had to go and then figure out how to then entertain, which was an entirely different thing. And that took me a couple of years of just researching and, you know, listening to podcasts and reading books and all the things that we do. And then eventually I put that into a book and published that. But the reason I did that was because I was doing a lot of manuscript assessments, editing work. And what I found was everyone was doing more or less the same things wrong. And it was really disheartening because people would be paying me quite a lot of money and I'm looking at it going, with a little bit of knowledge or insight, you could have quite easily fixed all these problems, got the story to a point where it was really ready for an edit, and then sent it on and got much better value for money. Instead, I'm giving you really basic advice. So that's why I wrote character and structure, I suppose. But that came out of my need to figure out how to write better stories for myself.
Okay.
So that's basically my journey from, you know, teenage kid going, yeah, I can do that, to being a full-time writer, pretty much.
I love the fact that it was on a dare, essentially.
Yeah, more or less. Yeah, I was like, well, I can't back down now, can I?
Well, now you write across two different series, which are part of a bigger universe. Yes. And you've got some standalones as well that you're writing. So I'm interested to know how you kind of juggle all these different projects, and, you know, how you decide what you're going to write at a time, or even if you write them all at the same time.
Right. Well, I actually write them all at the same time in a lot of ways. But the reason why I do that was because at one point I landed a publisher. And that was fantastic because I'd landed a publisher for this one book that I'd been writing forever and over the moon. But I also landed an agent at the same time. And I said to the agent, well, I've got four other stories that I want to write and this and that and a bunch of other things. And I said, what should I do? Should I finish this series or should I write some other books? She goes, no, don't finish the series in case it tanks. If it tanks, then you're not going to be able to, you've written three or four more books that aren't going to sell. You've just wasted your time. Write the other stories, get them out there, and then whichever one sticks, then you can obviously pursue that. So that's where, that's why I've started several series and not, you know, finished them as yet, I suppose. They're works in progress. And there's also several standalone novels, which I'm hoping to get published next. And then I'm going to go back to the series and finish those. And there's also other series that I've written the first book for instance, and with changes in the other parts of the series, I can no longer really use them as they are, so they'll have to be entirely rewritten.
Okay.
Which is a bit of a hassle, but yeah, it's worth it in the long run.
So presumably you're not writing all of these books at the same time, though. You're writing in one series, then you're moving to another series, then maybe a standalone, or are you writing three or four books in conjunction with one another?
Kind of yes to both those questions. I have started the sequels to both the series, but I have an issue with the fact that one of the series would contain spoilers for another one. So I'm a bit hesitant to finish that yet until I've done the other one. But I've also wrote four standalone novels which are just sitting there or have been just sitting there. And what I figured I would do is get those published and then I can move back into the series properly. One thing I have found, though, that was a little bit of a revelation to me, actually, was the fact that when I had all these different projects that I wanted to do, I kind of got writer's block because I was thinking, I want to do that and I want to do this and I want to do the other one and I want to do them all. And I'd kind of almost end up with, you know, the shakes trying to work out which one I wanted to do, and I'd end up getting none of it done. So I found that if I made a decision, whether it was the right decision or the wrong decision, it didn't matter. I made a decision and said, okay, I'm going to finish this book and I'm going to get it published. And then once that's done, I'm going to write this one and I'm going to finish it and get it published. And so on and so forth. It removes that indecision and it then creates a pathway forward. You don't have to, you know, worry about stressing over which one to do or if I'm going to do a little bit on this one today and a little bit on that one tomorrow. It's a clear and simple decision and then you just go with it.
Okay.
Yeah. Works great.
Yeah, Cool. Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, so you work on one book, then on another, but skip them, moving from series to series to standalone.
Potentially, yeah. At the moment, I've just I'm about to publish a standalone, and I'm almost finished writing the first draft of a second of a different standalone. And once they're done, I'll make a call on which of the other books I'm going to finish and publish next.
Okay. So now you did mention before we started recording that the last book that you published was in your Mermaid series. So I wonder if you can tell us a little bit about that.
Yes. Yeah, that was one of those stories, I suppose, where I had an idea. It was a discovery book, a pure discovery book. It was NaNoWriMo time, and if anyone's not sure what NaNoWriMo is, it's National Novel Writing Month, when you write a book in a whole month. And I think it's 50,000 words of a book, or as much as you can do. And everyone else was doing this thing, and I thought, oh, I'll give it a crack. And I had nothing prepared or ready to go, except I had this one idea, and it was a mermaid standing on a beach looking for a victim to drown. And that's all I knew. I didn't know anything else about this story except for this one fact. She had to drown someone or she was going to die. And so she had this big moral dilemma because she didn't want to drown anyone. She's, a nice person, I suppose. But if she didn't, it was going to be a very bad outcome for her. So she was trying to find someone that she could actually live with drowning. So she was looking for someone she didn't like or someone who was, mean or nasty. I had no idea what was going to happen next. Had no idea. I didn't know where it was going to go, what was going to be the outcome. I didn't even know what the main problem of the story was. I just, every day I sat down, wrote another chapter or the next section. And the only thing that got me through it was the fact that I had a little bit of advice given to me when I'd done a workshop at some point. And the advice was, what's the worst thing that could happen next? And I ran with that. So I'd write myself into a corner, have no idea how I'm going to get these characters out, or it'd start to slow down. I'd be going, oh, gee, it's getting a bit boring. I need to, switch it up. And I think, what's the worst thing that could happen? And I'd do that and then just run with it. And it was fantastic in the sense that it's a really fast-paced, action kind of orientated to some degree read, but also created a huge mess because I would be, in the end, I had a lot to clean up, I had a lot to fix. It ended up with a pretty good overall story arc, but that was more luck than anything else and still needed so much work. And I changed things. It wasn't even going to be a heavy on the supernatural sort of magical creature side, but characters that were human at the start had become other creatures, sort of halfway through. And I thought, what if they were vampires or something else? And so you can imagine that the mess it made doing discovering the story as I wrote it that way. So that took a lot of work to clean up and fix, and I almost gave up on it. That's how much work it was involved. But I got it there, and it's actually a really good read now. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm glad I did it.
It's a good lesson.
It taught me a lot about it taught me a lot about writing with a bit of a plan, though.
It's a good lesson there on, not giving up, on keeping going, because you don't know what the outcome will be. And even when you're kind of in the doldrums of it being really hard, if you just persist, keep going a little bit every day or a little bit every week, you'll get there. And
yes,
you don't know how it's going to end. Yeah. So you mentioned there that was purely discovery writing for the benefit of NaNoWriMo.
Yes.
Is that your usual writing process, or do you generally prefer to have a bit more of a plan before you start?
Definitely prefer to have a bit more of a plan. I am a discovery writer, so that is my favourite way to write. If I am going to write and thoroughly enjoy it, I need to have some kind of creative process within what I've written. But the funny thing is, and you probably know this, you've got the left brain, right brain type thing, and one side is creative, I suppose, and one side's logical. Or to put it another way, one side's emotional and one side is logical, and they don't talk to each other, these two halves of your brain. So if you're a discovery writer, you tend to be an emotional writer, which is fantastic because the characters are real to you there. You can just sit down and have a chat to them and they would talk back. That's how real they are. They're, amazing in that regard. But it tends to leave story structure as a mess. Quite often you'll go off on tangents, or it won't make sense, or logic won't display at all. It'll be just I'm trying to think of the right term that won't offend people, but it can be a big mess. So you need to understand how story structure works, because the structure is how people interpret your story. Mm-hmm. If they don't have that interpretation, they're not going to understand that the fact that you're talking about something here and doing something over there are connected necessarily. Mm-hmm. So you've got to have a really strong structure in order for people to appreciate your story. And so what I've found is that being a discovery writer, it helps a lot to start with the logical side of things, to at least plan out, if not every detail, all the big details. Sorry, keep going.
So I was just going to ask then, is that what led you to develop your character and structure workbooks? Is because you realised that as a discovery writer yourself, you needed that little bit more structure. And so is that what kind of prompted you to start this workbook series?
Absolutely, yeah. I had no idea I knew how structure worked in the sense that I'd seen a lot of movies, I'd read a lot of books, and I just sort of just came naturally. Like, you know, if you wrote something, it would just turn out that way. That's how structure worked. Apparently not. You actually need to plan these things out. And what I discovered was there's a whole heap of steps, or not so much steps, but story points that people expect in a story. And if you don't give them to them, they're going to wonder about the story. They're going to think that something is missing or not quite right. They may not know what it is. They may not understand that there's something wrong with the story, but they will know it, and you'll end up losing readers, or it'll fall over in some other way. So that was where the book came from, I guess, from my research into how story and structure work together. Mm-hmm. And then the other part of it was I was doing a lot of manuscript assessments, and people were making the same mistakes I was making, and they were simple to fix. But it was kind of a case of where is this information? I couldn't find it in a single place at all. And I know there are script writing books which tend to do this a lot better than novel writing books, but I couldn't find anything that gave me a clear pathway from one end of the story to another. And I cobbled all these little bits of information together through podcasts and reading books and listening to other writers talk and all sorts of stuff. And I eventually got to the point where I was able to create my own map. And so I created this map, and I put it on my website. So if anyone wants to grab a copy of it, it's there. And from that grew character and structure, which I think it should be compulsory reading for everyone who wants to read a story. To write a story, it's you got to have structure, and you got to know how characters work with that structure. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, your story is not going to work.
Mm-hmm. So, and I know that in conjunction with the books, you also teach workshops on this. I wonder if you could give our listeners a little flavour of your approach to structure and how you teach it.
I'm a little bit out of the game at the moment, thanks to COVID. There's been nothing happening for the last year and a half, but that depends on what people are looking for, I guess. I've done workshops, whether it be 6-week workshops at the local, I don't know if you have them, TAFEs, Technical and Further Education Centres, like a college or not a university, but a sort of somewhere between high school and university where people can go and do that. So they have night courses there. I've done them at major conventions. I've done them for writers' workshops down at, you know, like little country areas and everything in between, and mentoring and things like that. So depending on what people are after, I'll if it's a structured course, like over a 6-week course, I would plan that out in a lot of detail. And every night, say, it would be a 2-hour night, and I would cover certain topics. There'd be a first half and a second half, and people would have, you know, potentially homework or some idea of what to go on with after each session. If it's something else entirely, like I might be engaged to just do a workshop for a group at a convention, so I might be sitting in a stadium with 1,000 people or 30 people or whatever, and there'll be a topic, and it'll be just on that topic. It won't be necessarily everything I know. You just can't. But it would be potentially they might say, okay, we need to know about theme. So can you do us a workshop? So I'll do a workshop on theme. And theme is amazingly interesting. When I first heard about theme, I thought it was a case of it's about romance or it's about hope or something along those lines. It'd be a single word that you would associate with your story. It turns out theme is not that at all. That's kind of like a motive of a theme. Theme is actually a question or a statement, and it comes from the heart. So if for instance, you have an issue with a topic or you want to explore something like racism or religion or, you know, the history of slavery, you could create a theme out of that. For instance, you know, God is great, and there you have a theme there. So your story would then argue that theme. Or all men are bastards is another one that you might sort of look at and go, well, how can I demonstrate that all men are bastards or the opposite? And so your story would then answer that question or that statement by the end of it, but without being over, you know, you don't want to hit people over the head with it. You want to be subtle. You've got to demonstrate this working. That's kind of how theme works. But that's just one aspect of a story. And there's so many options that I could talk about tonight. It's just crazy.
Do you think that stories need a theme? Is that something that you think is an important aspect of storytelling?
I think they can benefit a lot from having a theme. I don't know that you absolutely have to have one. Depends on the story. They do tend to resonate better and will have a greater emotional engagement with your audience if they have one. But if you look at something like a particular genres will tend to be stronger in theme than others. Like if you watch an action movie, you'd be lucky if you could spot a theme, you know, 1,000 miles away. You go in, you're there to have fun. You know, you're not there to come away thinking about, oh my gosh, that was so deep and meaningful. It was, you know, it was an action movie. There could be some themes in there, but it's not really a big component of that kind of genre. Oh. But on the whole, yes, I think you do need a theme to really resonate with your audience. Mm-hmm.
Now, I wonder if I could just look back a little bit, just back to structure, because I'd like to know how you teach structure. So do you follow a 3-act structure? Do you use the hero's journey, or do you use something in between or a mixture of all? What's your approach to structure that you've put in your workbooks? So, all right, so he's pointing to a short structure diagram. Okay, so can you tell us about that?
Yeah, there's a story structure diagram on my website, so you can look at that. But basically, what it is, it's a 3-act structure broken up into 4 parts. So every 3-act structure should have 4 parts, a beginning and middle and an end. The middle is divided into 2 parts. So effectively, it's 25% each. So the beginning is a quarter of the story, the middle is 2 quarters, and the end is 1 quarter. So that's kind of it as a kind of an overview of how structure works. But then, for instance, the first quarter, the beginning, the story hasn't even started at that point. That's the setup. So the story doesn't start until about the 25% mark. When, like, if for instance, you're writing a murder mystery, in the beginning, there's going to be a murder and a mystery, and there'll be some kind of investigation start and that sort of stuff. You know, cops will turn up and look at the body and go, well, that doesn't look like it's natural causes. And they'll then obviously, you know, start to investigate. And once they start to investigate, that's when the story starts. And the same with the romance. There's, you get the same thing with the romance or epic fantasy. It doesn't matter what the genre is. You have the same kind of structure. There is this beginning part which doesn't, it's not where the story starts. It's the setup. And then the adventure begins. So that's the next quarter. So that's kind of the fun part. If, for example, we're talking about the cops investigating the murder, they're out there interviewing people. They're learning about the story world. They're learning about who these people are that may have committed this murder. If it's a romance, that you know the two people are kind of starting to date, but they're not really dating, and so they're kind of figuring out how that relationship's going to go. Usually a lot of fun. And then the third quarter is where things get more serious. And that kind of it changes the tone. So the protagonist generally becomes more proactive in the second half. And that's part of that tonal change. And there's also several major points in that part where the all is lost moment and the darkest hour. One's a physical sort of type thing, and the other one's an emotional, the emotional side of that. So the all is lost would be, oh my God, we've just broken up, or they've caught the killer and they've got away on a technicality. And then the darkest hour would be the emotional fallout from that. And the character's kind of trying to cope, I guess, or figure out some, you know, way to get through it. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's a false victory defeat part of that. So, as I said, it's a lot more serious. And then finally, there's the resolution, which, you know, if it's an action movie, it's, you know, the two big muscled men or, you know, ninja warriors or whoever going head to head. If it's a romance, it's, you know, they've usually broken up by this point and now they've got to figure out how they can get back together. If it's a, you know, any other genre, like a crime, they will have probably lost their initial means of catching the killer, and now they've got to find something else. So they come up with some other idea, and they usually end up winning. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how all stories work. Doesn't matter what genre you're in. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's very, very similar. They all kind of go through the same. I don't like using points or steps, but these things are what your audience will expect. Mm-hmm. They'll expect you to hit certain marks in a certain order, and that's kind of what structure does.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a structure that I like, that one. I find it to be the most flexible. So you can put almost any story to it, and you can plot it as much as you want if you're someone who likes the plots. And then if you're like me and you, just more discovery writers, you can leave it as loose as you want it to be as well. It's very flexible.
Yeah. I like to hit the big points and have an idea of where they're going to go. Mm-hmm. And then I like to fill in kind of the gaps. But that's my process. A lot of other writers, I know writers that need to know the kind of moss on the backside of the you know, broken, you know, burned down house in the middle of the woods where nobody's ever going to know about it, but they need to know. They need to know that kind of detail. And to me, that's kind of just crazy. Get on with the story. But they need to know that stuff. And other people, you know, kind of, I suppose, more towards my side of the approach, all they need is just the start of an idea and off they go, and they're happy with that too. Mm-hmm. It just does take more work in the back end, I suppose, to fix those sort of things. So the more work you do up front, the easier it is to write and the easier it is to edit and fix up. Mm-hmm. But you tend to put a lot of the creativity into the front part of it, whereas discovery writers tend to put that same creativity into the story as they go. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
And all those story points that I've just talked about, I've got examples in my book from everything from Pretty Woman to kids movies to Twilight even. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, you would look at a movie like that and you go, well, that doesn't really work structurally. But then you look at it and you break it down and you go, actually, this is amazingly well structured. It works perfectly. And the funny thing is you look at it, you go, it's Ferris Bueller's Day Off. It's his story. But when you look at it, it's not his story at all. He's like the Roadrunner or he's Bugs Bunny, basically. He's a guy that causes all the trouble and gets people into stuff. It's actually Cameron's story. So you just look at it like that, and it's amazing what you see when you start to understand how structure works.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that. That was a great kind of overview of the different points that we need to be thinking about and those different beats almost that we need to hit if we're wanting to structure our story well. So thank you for that. What are you writing at the moment? What's on your hit list at the moment?
I like to keep things a little bit different. I'm about to publish a story set in Canberra, near where I live. It's a turf war between the north and south. Canberra's a funny town in the sense that you tend to belong to the north or the south side of it. And there's this kind of invisible dividing line, which, like for instance, the people on the north side refer to the south side as people who live on the dark side. I don't know why. Maybe they're further south, I guess. But so I thought that was a great setup. So I've created a story about that, about a guy who's, and I write fantasy, so he's several hundred years old. He comes to Canberra to meet someone. And then realizes that his wife, who he'd actually buried 300 years ago or thereabouts, was alive and in Canberra, and on one of these part of this turf war. She's on the north side of town, and the process is it's sort of a little bit of a healing story because he's never really got over this, and then he ends up meeting saving a girl who then becomes his emotional support, I guess, or his a big part of his story. And to be honest, she almost steals the show. She pretty much does steal the show, actually. So, yeah. So there's that one. And then I've just started another one set in Las Vegas, which is a romance. So it's a cop there meets or is trying to catch a bad guy and ends up having to work for him. And more or less falls in love with him, and it's a very different story, very different tone. And again, that's a standalone, but they're all set in the same story universe. That's called the Vale of Gods. So it's part of this overall umbrella of stories, which is funnily enough set both here on Earth and in another universe. And there'll be crossovers and. Yeah, a bit like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I guess. There's this stuff going on everywhere, all over the place, and that all kind of ties in together nicely at the end.
It sounds like lots of fun and lots of kind of scope for different types of
stories. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and it's fun coming up with different creatures as well. So, sorry, keep going, yeah.
So I was just going to ask, I'm conscious of time, and I was wanting to know, where can our listeners find out more about you and your work?
Probably the best place would be my website, which is chrisandrews.me. Nice and easy.
Brilliant. That's lovely. Well, Chris, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to listening to a few more of your podcasts and seeing how this one comes out.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you found that helpful and inspirational. Now, don't forget to come on over to Facebook and join my group, Turning Readers into Writers. It is especially for you if you are a beginner writer who is looking to write their first novel. If you join the group, you will also find a free cheat sheet there called 3 Secret Hacks to Write with Consistency. So go to emmadesi.com/turningreadersintowriters, hit join. Can't wait to see you in there. All right, thank you. Bye-bye.